Welcome to episode 240 of the G2 on 5G. It's the latest inside scoop on everything 5G and 6G. We cover six topics in about 20 minutes, and it's brought to you by More Insights and Strategy. I'm Will Townsend, and joining me again this week is fellow analyst Anshul Sag. Let's get started with my first topic. And Anshul, I want to talk about T-Mobile. I spent some time with them last week at, of all places, a Gartner symposium. That is where we held the fourth annual awards. It was called the Unconventional Awards, but it's been changed to Innovate. And we moved it from Mobile World Congress, where we had held it for 3 years prior. So it was a great event. We were celebrating customer successes utilizing T-Mobile's infrastructure. And that is a great segue to my first topic. So at the event, T-Mobile used it as an opportunity to launch what they call their Edge Control solution. And what Edge Control does, it combines the company's 5G advanced network with local breakout. And what that does is it delivers almost a private-like cellular experience. But what I love about it is that it doesn't require any infrastructure on-premises. So there are other solutions that are light, that use routers with a degree of intelligence, and then use cloudified core infrastructure to make that all work. But what I really like about this solution is that it requires zero on-premise infrastructure. And it's very interesting. It's very forward thinking from my perspective. And it has the potential to really reduce the complexity of taking advantage of a cellular private network. T-Mobile has done some pretty innovative things with their advanced network solutions, basically combining their public network with private infrastructure to deliver a hybrid approach and meet customers where they're at from a deployment perspective, from a CapEx perspective. But I really like this. And I know you caught the news. Any thoughts here? Is this a game changer? Because you and I have talked about the fact that it took a few years for private cellular to really get its footing because there were so many different ways to get there. And I thought it really confused enterprises. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting solution, especially for someone like T-Mobile who doesn't have as much of an edge play as, say, Verizon or AT&T do. So I think that this will expand their capabilities for edge compute and satisfy a lot of the needs that people might have that they didn't previously have as an offering. And I think it strategically improves their competitiveness against Verizon and AT&T, considering that they do have a pretty good 5G network. I feel like edge control is something that they probably needed. And I think it really rounds out all the other offerings that they have.
I agree. And you and I think we spoke about this. We may have referenced it, but we couldn't go into a lot of detail because it was under NDA. But you and I spent time several weeks ago with T-Mobile in Bellevue, and we were briefed on the roadmap. And so this is one of the things that's coming from the T-Mobile for Business Enterprise roadmap. And all I can tell our viewers and listeners is that there's a lot of other pretty compelling stuff that's behind edge control. And from my perspective, it really legitimately places T-Mobile right there in the thick of things with Verizon and AT&T that have traditionally had very strong cellular enterprise offerings just beyond access. So it's great to have a third player in the mix here in the U.S. that's providing customers with a lot of flexibility and a lot of choice. So it's fun to watch. But hey, let's go to your first topic. And we're actually going to make this a two-part topic. There was a big event. NVIDIA held its GTC DC event. Our fearless leader, Patrick Moorhead, was there. There was a very interesting sort of pregame session where Patrick spent time with a number of different folks. There was someone from the media, don't recall her name. I think there was a very well-known venture capitalist.
She's from CNBC.
Yeah, CNBC. And there was a very well-known venture capitalist. And so the three of them anchored this pregame event before the actual conference started. And then they had a bunch of different AI companies, Perplexity, you name it, filter through there. So it was like 3.5 hours. I think you can catch the replay online, but that's a long preamble, but I'm going to let you take it away because you want to talk about a big partnership between Nokia and NVIDIA.
Yeah, so this is like a kind of an extension of what we heard during the Capital Markets Day with NVIDIA building this Arc computer for 6G. Obviously, Nokia was already kind of part of that announcement back I think it was May,
yeah,
in San Francisco. And that was when OpenAI and NVIDIA and T-Mobile all had these big announcements. And Nokia and Ericsson were part of that as well. Mm. And this announcement is an extension of that in the sense that they're still going to be doing the ARC aerial RAN computer for 6G. And there's still AI RAN, but the explicit call out of T-Mobile is there. I read the LinkedIn post of the CEO of Nokia, and he also mentioned Dell, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, for server. Yeah, for right? server. Yeah.
So there's clearly a more strong U.S. focus on all of this. And then the big deal was that NVIDIA is investing $1 billion into Nokia, which is what they did with Intel, a very similar kind of partnership slash investment. And I think it also catapulted the stock like 25%.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But what it does is it's like a vote of confidence from NVIDIA that Nokia is on the right path and investors are going to pour in. And it's really interesting because the way I see what NVIDIA is doing here is leveraging its strength in the market to give itself an opportunity to get undervalued companies really cheaply,
yeah,
have a significant share of the company's stock, and also be able to profit off of the success that they are enabling with their technology. It's really interesting. There's not that many details, not that many more details on what's mm-hmm. actually going to roll out, but this is very much an America-focused announcement, even though Nokia is a Finnish company and Ericsson actually has a US factory. But nonetheless, this is still a very interesting announcement and a continuation of what's already been talked about.
Yeah.
I think the Dell component is relatively new. I don't seem to recall that having been brought up before, but there's still a long way to go. We still need to get a lot more detail on what this is actually going to do and how it's going to look. But T-Mobile seems to be the lead here. And I'll say the whole GTC DC event was very focused on the US. And in my write-up that I think you and I will do together, I think that the focus is going to be that this is really about addressing the needs and concerns of the US government.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of HPC stuff. There was some auto, tons of AI, and then also 6G. I think this was a very catered event to satisfy DC's concerns. And you can say this is the Trump administration specifically, but really, if you look at it, all of these concerns have been in place for quite some time. And it's mm-hmm. really about addressing what the DC audience wants to hear.
Yeah, no, I agree. Those are spot on insights. The Dell relationship is not new. So a few years ago, NVIDIA retired its compute infrastructure and they moved over to Dell Technologies. There's some NEB certification. So this isn't just common off the shelf type server solutions. And obviously with the disaggregation with OpenRAN and that sort of thing, Dell's been playing there. But this just provides another opportunity for Dell to strengthen its partnership with Nokia and sell more compute infrastructure. I think from my perspective, NVIDIA choosing Nokia was somewhat strategic just based on some of the recent work that I've done with Nokia around their autonomous networks platform. And so our viewers and listeners, if you're interested, you can hit the More Insights and Strategy website. I've published a few formal papers and I've done some contributed writing, what we call our analyst insights. So go hit our website if you want to learn more about that. But that kind of is a nice segue to my part two on GTC DC, where I want to talk about what was announced as an all-American AI RAN stack. That sounds like apple pie and football and you know whatnot. But obviously, the federal government has been very focused on the need to domesticate the supply chain. To a certain extent, that happened with Open RAN and 5G, but there's a real opportunity with 6G. To get ahead of this. And again, it's been a very strategic focus for the federal government when you look at the rip and replace that started with Chinese infrastructure and then Open RAN. And I published something on LinkedIn a few months ago around Open RAN, its successes, its failures. It'll be interesting to see how that sort of all winds up. But let me get to the crux of what this all-American AI native wireless stack is. It's obviously involving the aerial platform that you talk about, which, by the way, at GTC DC this week, NVIDIA also announced the fact that they are open sourcing that. So that's pretty exciting. So that's going to really remove the barriers for adoption. And certainly NVIDIA will benefit. You need the hardware acceleration and networking and all of that to make this all work. But I think their move to move it to open source, I think is great. It's just going to accelerate all the development behind it. But when you look at the partners, this is a full stack solution. You've got Cisco providing user plane function and 5G core software. You've got, and you've also got some specific 6G like applications from MITRE and from Booz Allen as well. Specifically going into the applications, there's a lot of like camera vision, computer vision with spectrum sensoring. And the whole notion of AI RAN is to more effectively utilize spectrum, right? And you and I have talked about there are many different schemes to go do that. But that is going to be important. And from my perspective, you know, and then you've been playing with the DGX Spark as well. So a lot of the focus at the event as I tuned in over the last couple of days was around the developer. And you might want to share some of your initial experiences because you've got one of those units, right? You've been playing around with it.
Yes, it's a cool little device. It does get a little warm while you're using it because it doesn't really have very active cooling, but you'll appreciate one of the coolest parts of it, which is this port right here. That's for the 200 gigabit link using ConnectX 7. And then you can scale two of them together and double the memory capacity that you have. It's just a cool little box to have for AI development because it gives you that big model support with that 120 gigs of unified memory, CPU and GPU. And it's got a 20-core CPU. It's pretty powerful. And then a pretty powerful GPU as well. And it can do a decent amount of AI inference that doesn't really bog down your machine, especially if you have like a laptop or something where that's your primary development environment. And yeah, you can also just have it like as a server for other things as well. So it's a Linux box. It's really what it is. NVIDIA has just made the entire software stack on that device really easy to use. And all you need to do is just find the different samples and different playbooks that NVIDIA has built for the application you're looking for. And you might not even have to know how to code to deploy some of these things, which is really cool because this ease of use is really one of the biggest challenges for coding and deploying AI. So yeah, I think it's really cool. And they announced a bunch of networking stuff as well, or at least rehashed it. Yeah. It seemed like a lot of things were also rehashed, like the T-Mobile and Nokia announcement. I think this is a very America rah-rah kind of thing.
Yeah. It was in DC, right? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I think it's important to understand the context of it and why it was done. But ultimately, I think NVIDIA is kind of the center of the AI universe right now. Yeah. And I think it's smart for the US government to mostly let them do what they need to do to be successful. And yeah, I think the US government doesn't want to enable someone else that's not a US company to be successful, because ultimately they want that orbit to be around US companies. Yep. Yep. And for the US to be able to deploy things. But I will say, I do think this administration is a little bit short-sighted on power, and they need to be accelerating power deployment and not canceling multi-gigawatt projects just because they're green. So I think power is going to be the biggest challenge. And I think NVIDIA knows it. Everybody else knows it. And even the Chinese government knows it. And the Chinese government's building so much capacity that if they don't use it for AI, they will not know what else to do with it.
Last thing I'll mention, I want to circle back to the Nokia NVIDIA announcement. The interesting thing, and I shared some insights as I was taking off from Austin because I'm in the Bay Area for another event this week, but the Space Mob jumped on my one post, and they probably jumped on your X post as well. AirScale, a souped up version of Nokia AirScale, is used within AST Space Mobile's low Earth orbit satellite deployment. And there's some speculation by the Space Mob out there that can position AST Space Mobile quite well. Because again, the 6G standards have not been defined. There's a lot of predefinition. Qualcomm has done this. Even T-Mobile has predefined 5G advanced. But suffice it to say, we know that, you know, that some form of AI is going to be a part of that. And most likely we're going to see low Earth orbit satellite become a big component of that. I wanted to mention that as well before we move to your second topic. But let's do that. So you want to talk about Samsung Networks and SoftBank signing an MOU.
Yeah, so I originally thought this was an MOU with Samsung Networks. And then I looked at the actual release and it says Samsung Electronics.
Huh.
Which is interesting because it says it's an MOU for joint research into next generation communication technologies, including 6G and AI-based RAN, which sounds like Samsung Networks, right?
Yes, yeah.
and it even goes into more detail. It says the two companies will categorize next generation communications technologies into four candidate areas: 6G AI for RAN, AI and RAN, and large telecom models. So all of this sounds
it's all like networks.
Samsung yeah. Networks. Yeah. But for some reason, this is being called Samsung Electronics. Maybe it's because Samsung Electronics is technically the bigger parent company.
The parent, yeah.
But I thought it was really weird. That's very much networks announcement. But nonetheless, what this means is that a Korean company is going to be building a Japanese company's network, or at least helping build it, which is very interesting because that isn't, there's some cultural challenges there.
Yes, there are, my friend, because I've spent time in both Seoul and many.
Yeah. So, you know, that this is actually a very big deal. And yeah, it's just very interesting because most of this is about AI RAN, but also AI RAN orchestration and using 6G and AI together. So this is very interesting because SoftBank is one of the foundational carriers in Japan, and Samsung Networks is one of the bigger infrastructure providers in the world. They're not necessarily like an Ericsson or Nokia, but they're constantly catching up. And this is just another demonstration of them really building partnerships in places you wouldn't expect them to.
Yeah.
And SoftBank is a pretty big carrier. It'll be really interesting to see how this actually manifests itself in the 6G network. We obviously are not going to know the reality of that for probably a few more years at the very minimum, because they're talking about research, but it's still an MOU. So there's definitely some real meat to it, but it'll be interesting to see how they actually manifest as partners and whether Samsung Networks ends up being a bigger part of the Japanese market.
Yeah, clearly from my perspective, because I have spent a lot of time with the Samsung Networks team, they clearly established a leadership position in vRAN and Open RAN. The challenge, and they traditionally weren't strong in RAN, if you think back to even 4G and 3G, right? But because that's been their core focus, when the RAN infrastructure got all built out and then carriers were focused on core deployment, their business, I won't say tank, but then they saw a significant dip because the lion's share of what they were driving out of their networks, BU, was RAN infrastructure, and in particular vRAN and to a lesser extent Open RAN. So yeah, it'll be super interesting to see how this MOU sort of moves forward, but they certainly have some very solid strengths when it comes to introducing virtualization, and there is AI that's infused in that infrastructure as well. And in fact, I can't really share the details, but I'm hoping that we'll get to the point where we can publish a more insights and strategy research paper that goes into a little more depth around what Samsung Networks is doing in that regard. But with that, I'm going to go to my third and final topic. I'm going to be really succinct on this one. But I recently got back from the Baltics. It was my sixth or seventh year to go to this event. It was called 5G Techretory. This year they dropped the 5G because the event is becoming more than 5G, right? It's cloud, it's AI and that sort of thing. So they wanted to recast it. But I had the opportunity to host two panels. And the one in particular that I want to highlight was titled The Defense of 5G. And it's funny, even some of the panel members thought that title was misleading. It's like, are we going to talk about defense use cases for 5G? Because obviously in that part of the world, you know, you're very close to Russia. And a lot of the operators like Latvia Mobile Telephone, LMT, are focused on defense applications with 5G, whether they're backpacks or their drones or whatnot. But at a high level, like my take on it, spending time, and it was obviously I'm the American and the panel members were from Europe and they were from 6G consortiums, research institutions. We had Dean Bobley, who is the 5G doubter. We had another doubter on the panel as well. And I'm the optimist about all this. But the reality is, I think in Europe, they've experienced the same challenges that we've seen in the US and other parts of the world with respect to GSMA. Please never, ever do another split with NA and NSA. And it complicates things in the European Union because each individual country manages the regulation and spectrum auctions and that sort of thing. So it makes it even far more complex. We've had a delayed rollout with standalone. Finally, AT&T announced just a few weeks ago that they've achieved nationwide SA. I expect, and you and I have been talking about this, you and I have been predicting for years that eventually AT&T and Verizon would close the gap sometime in the second half of this year so we can take our victory lap on that. But it's been even more complicated in Europe. And like when the subject of 6G comes up, there were a couple of panel members that said, hey, you know what? Hold on. We got to get through 5G. We're not even at 5G advanced yet. And I'm also hearing, what are the applications? What are the use cases? They've been very focused on access. I brought up sort of the killer use case that we've seen in the US around FWA, and they agreed. T-Mobile's done a great job with that. Now you've got AT&T with its Internet Air product, delivering that both to consumers and enterprises when fiber is not available. But suffice it to say, the viewpoint on the success of 5G is, I think it's pretty similar to the US as well. And so I think we've learned a lot going through this process and this journey, and you and I doing this podcast for the last 5+ years. And so I just hope that we don't make the same mistakes. GSMA doesn't make the same mistake, and I don't think they will, and that we see a much more successful and accelerated role to 6G when the time is right. So any additional commentary there before we close it out with your final?
I think there's going to be a lot of cool use cases for 6G. I'm happy that there isn't going to be an NSA-SA battle again. It really screwed a lot of things over. It's okay. Just wait to deploy the G when you're ready and no weird stuff. Even if it means 5G comes later, or if it means 6G comes later, it'll be what people expect, right?
Yep.
We still don't have nationwide in a lot of places.
Exactly.
There's so much to talk about. It would be its own podcast.
We might have to do another podcast on that topic alone. Hey, let's close it out. And boy, it seems like Verizon's new CEO is already on the job, right? So you want to talk about some late breaking news at Verizon.
Yeah, so Verizon has inked a deal. It's a wholesale deal with Eaton Fiber. And basically what it is, that Eaton will build out the network for Verizon, and Verizon will be able to serve and market those customers and be able to basically expand its fiber footprint beyond where Verizon is today, or in addition to where Frontier is also today. So it's going to be even bigger than the combined assets of what Verizon will have with the Frontier combination. I will say that I haven't really heard that much about Eaton before, but it seems that Tillman, which is the parent company of Eaton, has some capacity in Florida. And it's unclear if there's other locations where they will be able to expand capacity. But it seems like Verizon is looking for ways to build out fiber with partners. I believe Tillman/Eaton will fund a lot of this development. Verizon won't technically own the networks, but they will be serving them and basically marketing those networks and buying that wholesale from Eaton. And the Tillman Fiber Company in Florida has T-Mobile as a tenant. This company is very clearly like a wholesaler that builds out networks for companies that want to have capacity but don't want to spend the capital to build them out. And yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what other deals they sign. But very clearly, this is a continuation of Verizon's expansion into fiber, which is a very clear, fast follow after AT&T's fiber build out. And so is T-Mobile. T-Mobile is also following. AT&T is definitely leading here. And it'll be interesting to see. Verizon also acquired Starry, which is also like a FWA, which we talked about before.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of really interesting things that Verizon's trying to do to expand their broadband business. And it's funny because a lot of people don't remember this, but Verizon sold their fiber business to Frontier.
Yeah.
And bought it back, which is very funny, by just buying the whole company.
Yeah.
But I will say I'm happy for a company to admit its mistakes.
Yeah.
And that mistake happened under the old CEO and was corrected under the old CEO as well. Yeah, I think this is good for Verizon. I think more competition is better. If people have more choice on any kind of internet connection, it'd be great, let alone fiber. I know some people who lived in Austin and other areas where Google Fiber was the only option.
Yeah.
And the prices were okay. But once another fiber option came available, prices fell through the floor. Fiber is great, but competition in fiber is better.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know what's really interesting? This has been AT&T's mantra, right, with fiber, and they're overinvesting in areas, even in areas that have lower population density. And for the longest time, and this was before T-Mobile launched its FWA product, but T-Mobile had the attitude that, hey, it's not strategic, right? If you need fiber for backhaul, but it wasn't until they really got serious about using their spectrum at T-Mobile to launch their consumer and enterprise FWA that they really started doubling down on fiber. And like Verizon's been in and out. They had their Fios service. And to your point, I'm glad you brought it up. It's this Pac-Man thing with Frontier. But clearly, when you look at recent earnings, they crushed it. They're ahead of their very aggressive plan on fiber. ARPU is super healthy, super high. Mobility was fairly strong for them as well. Fiber is foundational. It's driving broadband. It's the best broadband experience. And you've got to have fiber for backhaul for mobility. AT&T doubled and tripled down. They've got quite a large checkbook. But yeah, we're seeing T-Mobile and seeing Verizon follow suit as well. Hey, my friend, it was another great podcast. Why don't you take us home?
Absolutely. We hope our viewers and listeners found this week's topics interesting. If anyone out there would like to provide insights for a future podcast on or a future 5G topic, please reach out to us on social media. Will's at Whaletown Tech and I'm at Anshul Sag. We hope you have a great rest of your week, and please don't forget to rate us and subscribe.